Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 6, part 2 of The Power of Clarity with Mark Pearson. Before, we were just talking about the overall philosophy of what clarity really means and how you can look at your investments or really what's going on in your portfolio and start getting a greater understanding of what all of the numbers and the different ideas and theories behind it. In this podcast, number 2, we're going to distill a lot more of the foundational philosophy of Nepsis, which is know what you own, why you own it. But before we do that, this podcast is called The Power of Clarity, which is episode number 6. You said something on our break here between recording, which was you can't put a price on clarity. Did I just say that right?
No, I said, can you
put a price on
clarity?
Well, and the answer to that is absolutely no. I know that you quantify it because you run a business, but can we start with that and then we'll move on to those other questions, please?
Right. So in an industry, of course, where people are making a race to the bottom, if you will, buying index funds that, you know, charge 0.06% or the cheapest possible. I mean, pretty soon you're going to be able to buy index funds for basically nothing. There's clearly a push by investors to get their investing as cheap as possible, their investment management cheap as possible. And they have been told that active managers don't outperform indexes. So you might as well just pay less and buy the index, right? But the problem is that many comparisons, if you will, are not going to be exact to an index. And so you're, in many cases, you're comparing apples and oranges. And so you get into this comparison business. And, you know, I often use the analogy, Matt, I believe the financial services industry is turning into the McDonald's industry. They're turning it into a fast food franchise business where you go to McDonald's because the hamburgers are cheaper there than if you go to a restaurant, you sit down, you get a meal, and someone serves you and takes care of you, right? You get in line, and you're kind of just – you're just becoming a number. But everybody's financial plan is different. And I think back to the financial crisis, and I think back to corrections over the 20-plus years I've been doing this, and how many times I have sat and talked with a client and said, have you looked at your portfolio and see what you've owned? And they say, no. Some say, yes. But when I say no, when they say no, I say to them, well, why would you want to sell stuff and you don't even know what you own? What if you go look at that and you see the businesses you own? You own J&J. Do you really think J&J is going to go away? And of course, they say, of course not. I own J&J.
Right.
That's a really good company.
Yeah.
I say, exactly. That's what investing is about. Now, the people who say, yeah, I know what I own, and they still want to go to cash, this gets into what we talked about in the last podcast, the first segment, Matt, which is the behavioral aspect, right? The emotional predisposition of not wanting to see their portfolio go down. Now, let me make a very important statement. It's this. If you have been honest in doing what we call an investment policy and an objective setting questionnaire, this is a questionnaire proprietary to our firm that gets not only into the empirical data but also the behavioral data of an investor. If you have filled that out properly, your portfolio is appropriately allocated and you have no business moving your money to cash, you stick to the plan because the volatility associated with that coincides with the answers you answered on your questionnaire.
Mm.
So why would you want to be selling? You know, this gets back to the idea of how many times I've talked people, quote unquote, off the ledge. And they come back and say, well, why don't we buy more of these things? Why aren't we buying more?
Uh-huh.
We should be buying more of that company. It is an amazing transformation for the investor. And that gets back to the question, Can you put a price on clarity or a value on clarity?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you can't, because over the long term of investing, how many times will your advisor have to talk you off the ledge by helping you understand at a greater level what you own and why you own it?
Okay. I need you to unpack that just a little bit more for me. So yep. When you say a good company, now I know you've got, and in fact, if our listening audience isn't aware of this, you have a team of some of the most highly educated and qualified people that you can possibly hire in this industry, which are certified, CFAs.
Well, we've got CFAs, yeah. We've got CFPs, yeah. We've got CIMAs.
Yeah, massive education.
Darn near everything.
Yeah, which is wonderful because, you know, that's what their education is for, to be able to find those good companies. But from what you do incredibly well, Mark, which is explain things so that people can understand it, because if we had a CFA on, I think we would probably lose people in about 3 seconds. But please explain to the audience what you – because you've used the word good company a number of times. Can you explain what that means, please?
Yeah, so to us, and we often talk, Matt, by the way, that's a phenomenal question. That's a great, deep question. Here's why. When you have financial advisors on, or when we have people who are investors listening to this podcast, many of them may work for a corporation. Many of them may even own a company themselves, including financial advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that there are multiple components that make a company a good company or a great company. One of them, of course, is the Warren Buffett idea of the economic moat, right?
Mm-hmm.
A term that is thrown around every once in a while, which basically has to do with, you know, the old English castles and, you know, having the water around, having a moat around the castle to make it difficult to get in, right? To penetrate.
Sure.
So the term economic moat refers to a business ability to maintain a competitive advantage over its competitors in order to protect its long-term profits and market share from competing firms. So when you have a wide economic moat, you've got a wide moat. It's harder to get to the castle. It's hard to penetrate that company. Brand is a key component of that. When you look at when you look at our clients' investments, many of them are leaders in their industry. They are strong brands in their business that have proven to be successful over time. Now, there are other things we have in there because you've got an asset allocated portfolio, but the bottom line is brand and economic moat are two of the biggest things we focus on when it comes to a good company. And of course, then there's I won't get into all the boring statistical analysis, return on equity, return on assets, price to earnings ratio, PEG ratio, blah, 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 all the other stuff that no one really cares to know about at this point. But the bottom line is you can have a business that has a low PE ratio and the stock does nothing. You can have a company with an extremely high PE ratio, i.e. Amazon, right, and be a killer, killer stock for decades. You know, Amazon.com, for people who don't know, started out being an online book company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Internet book selling. Now look at them.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a good friend of mine the other day about Walmart. He worked at Walmart for years. He said when Sam Walton started Walmart, Walmart was a horrible idea. It was a horrible investment.
Hmm.
And I said, you're kidding. Why is that? He says, well, here was the theory. Sam Walton was going around telling how great Walmart was. And here's why. Because we're going to build big stores out in the middle of nowhere where there's no people. And then we're going to build these big distribution centers to store product. And then we're going to sell the product at a cheaper price than anybody else. So we're going to build. We're going to sell at lower prices. And we're going to do it in areas where there's no people. And look at Walmart today. You see, the problem investors have, and I alluded to this in the last segment, 50 years ago, stocks were held for an average of 8 years. Mm-hmm. Today, they're held for only 8 months. information news flow. People allow their emotional position to get ahead of them and make irrational decisions.
Now, we as investors get these horrible, horrible booklets talking about the investments that we own and blah, blah, blah. How do you suggest that investors interact with that material? And how do you, even from an advisor side, so not just an independent investor, but from a financial advisor side, how do you help people communicate either the value or what's inside of those without making people fall asleep?
I'll tell you what, Matt, you are stinking dialed in. This is the dichotomy of NEPSIS. Truthfully, at the end of the day, most investors will never really understand at a deep level what they own and why they own it.
Right. Okay.
And many investors actually will not care. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, many investors will say, I don't care about all that. I want to make money. Now, well-run businesses over time do make money, right? You have to set the reasonable expectations. But it is our belief. Let me give you a couple of interesting statistics, of course. Number one, I've said it before. We have more cash on the sidelines today than we did at the bottom of the financial crisis. You think about that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
More cash on the sidelines. And even the night before Trump was elected president, the S&P futures were locked limit down. They were locked limit down when they found out he was going to win. And the next day, the market exploded, and it's been nothing but straight up from there. And people continue to prognosticate, postulate, and speculate about, quote unquote, what they think the market is going to do. Don't think about what a market is going to do. Think about what a business is going to do over time. And so the power of clarity really is a, for a lack of a better phrase, is the creature comfort for the investor, Matt, to help them know and understand that during periods of uncertainty, I can at least take solace at looking at the companies I own. And if I need to find out why I really own something, I can ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, I know a lot of these companies. These are great companies. And the volatility should give me the opportunity to buy more of that great company when it's on sale.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to reduce this to the ridiculous, right? I'm going to make this an exaggeration. Most people probably don't realize this, but a lot of the S&P 500's growth between 2010 and 2015, one of the companies that helped them do that was a company called Apple.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, most people haven't. What most people also don't realize is that Apple was a penny stock that went to $100 a share and then all the way back to a penny stock, only to come back to be one of the biggest companies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would have just stuck to a time-tested buy discipline and sell discipline, how much money would you have made in such a great brand?
Oh, dear God. Unbelievable.
Billions.
Yeah.
Same with Berkshire Hathaway.
Mm-hmm.
People listen to too much noise and crap that inhibits clarity.
Mm-hmm.
When ultimately at the end of the day, here's the best analogy for that I can give you. You ever heard a business owner say, I'm not going to invest in the stock market. I'd rather invest in my own company because at least I know what I own and why I own it.
Oh, Mark, I've heard that so many times. I mean, it's unbelievable how often I've heard that.
Yes. Quote unquote, the stock market is nothing more than a gamble.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people say that, Matt? Because they don't know what they own.
Absolutely.
And why they own it.
Yeah. Could you imagine if the listeners would have the same level of understanding and passion about what they owned in the market as they do with their own company that they work for? I mean, that would change the game, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. We had this new I had this new client. I mean, it's funny. We get new accounts, and so we've got positions that are just, you know, it's fun to see cost basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had this client, and this, by the way, is one of the great powers of Clarity and flexibility, by the way. They owned United Technologies. Okay, this is about 2.5 years or so ago. And United Technologies, their cost basis was like $1.32. And at the time, the stock was at, I think, like 100, 105, somewhere in that range. And they had owned it for decades, right? And this person who we started managing money for had inherited the money.
Hmm.
And what most investors don't realize is that in non-IRA accounts, when your heirs inherit non-qualified money, the investment gets a stepped-up cost basis at the date of death.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time that person died, the cost basis was no longer $1.38. It was $105.
Wow.
Okay. When we started managing the money, the stock had pulled back to 95. And it wasn't a stock we wanted to own. We weren't going to own it. It's not that it's a great business, but it didn't fit the machine. It didn't fit, you know, remember from the last episode, you own everything for a specific reason, right?
Right.
So it didn't fit the allocation. We sold it at 95. They took a tax loss
mm-hmm.
on that stock from 105 to 95 after the cost basis on the original purchase was $1.38. Wow. Are you flipping kidding me? Is that not the greatest thing about investing you've ever heard in your life?
That is an awesome story, man. That's totally awesome.
I mean, that is the epitome
yeah.
of great flexibility and transparency in investing.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, I mean, at the end of the day, this gets – I mean, there's so many podcasts we can do on this, Matt. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's insane.
Well, absolutely. You keep opening up little cans that I keep thinking to myself, all right, that's for another podcast. That's for another podcast. Because
just remind me, would you?
I will. And it's fun because this is something that needs to be – you know, you need to take these tangents, right? And after we take these tangents and you open up, you know, just kind of open up the can so that people can say, oh, okay, so that's what's in there, then you and I are going to dive much more deeply in this. So this part two of The Power of Clarity, we definitely broke down really what a good company is so that you can understand that when Nepsis is talking to you or an advisor that uses Nepsis, you're going to have a much better understanding of what you own and why you own it, because you're going to have a better grasp of just the philosophical underpinnings. And the two examples that you used, which was Apple or Berkshire Hathaway, and you've hearkened to Warren Buffett, who probably is single-handedly the greatest investor of all times. The things that you're looking for in a company definitely seem to be the same things that we know that he looks for in a company. I love that you talked about flexibility. I love that in this podcast and the last podcast, you spent some time talking about really what the market is. And by the way, I think that really should be episode 7 or 8. I think we need to dive a lot more into the definition of what a market is, how markets work, not just Wall Street, but markets in general.
Yes.
I think that would be just a lot of fun. I'd love to hear your thought leadership on that.
Yeah, that'd be great. I could probably even get Chuck on that one, our head of research. Let me just piggyback real quick off of that. Everything you just said is completely accurate. Now, the benefits of that are key. And one of the biggest benefits, I believe, and we believe here at Nepsis, is that when you bring all that together of what you just said, it allows an advisor to differentiate themselves from other advisors because it puts them in a position of leadership, a position that investors are obviously begging for because they're going and buying index funds. You know, Betterment went and did their whole deal, right? You can just go buy, you get super low fee, you can go buy index funds and do all this other kind of stuff, and the fee was super cheap, right? And Betterment found themselves in a position where, holy cow, we got to go hire advisors because people are calling saying they want more advice now.
Right.
Investors want advice. They need advice. They want leadership. They need leadership. And what clarity does is it enhances the advisor's ability to differentiate themselves from others and lead the clients. And isn't that exactly why they came in the business?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
I love so Fidelity's had to do the same thing. Vanguard's had to do the same thing. TD's had to do the same thing. Scottrade had to do the same thing. All of these little pop-up shops that I see in my community of all of these, online brokerage firms that were going to be super duper cheap and you could do it yourself. Right. Yeah, there's a human being in there or multiple human beings who are fully licensed human beings because people want that name and a face. I remember when this whole robo thing, it really started gaining some traction, and I was talking, my advisors were freaking out, and I was like, you know what? Let this settle in, because there's a time and a place for that. But all said and done, when you get to a certain age or a certain income level or a certain need, you don't go on the computer and, type in your symptoms to WebMD. You go to a doctor.
That's right. I talked a lot about this on our radio show, the idea of, this whole thing with the robo. And I told people, you watch, they're going to end up having to hire advisors because not everybody wants to go to McDonald's.
That's right.
And the question you have to ask yourself as an advisor, Matt, is do you want to work with the advisor or with the client who's a McDonald's thinker? Mm-hmm. One of my mentors gave me a great phrase decades ago. Not all meat is good meat. Some like hamburger. Some like fillets. I only like fillets. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of meat I want to eat. And so it's the same with the advice we get. Mm-hmm. It's the same with the leadership we get. It's the same with the quality of investments we own. Mm-hmm. Let's not be a McDonald's.
Yeah. And with that, all right. So, Mark, thank you very much for episode number 6 today, part 2 of The Power of Clarity. I think next time we're going to dive more into the, what is a market and how does it work for episode number 7. So let's make sure that we get who was it again? Who was the guest?
Chuck,
man, he was so much fun on the podcast. For a guy who's the head of research, he was wildly entertaining and informational. So we should get Chuck back on more often. All right.
We're going to get him back.
Fantastic. All right. So, Mark, thank you for your time today.
You bet. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yeah. And if you all have not subscribed to the podcast yet, make sure that you click the subscribe now button below. So every time Mark and Nepsis comes out with a new podcast, it will be directly delivered to your listening device. And with this, for Mark Pearson, this is Matt Halloran. This was part 2 of Power of Clarity, episode number 6. Episode 7 will be on your way very soon. Have a wonderful day.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.